Hello and welcome to another episode of On The Topic. This week, I'm sad to say I'm going to be bawling my eyes out. I'm Alex.
Grab those tissues because we're in for a morbid ride. And I am Dan.
And hot off our recent sofa catch-up, we've got something promised for a while now. You are going to have to, I don't know how to describe this, sit back, relax, and try and take in the ride that we're about to take you on. This is the saddest movie death of all time, Volume 1.
This is the saddest On The Topic episode ever.
To date. Yeah. Until we get to Volume 2. It's bleak, man. I mean, when we first came across this, I think... Did you come up with this? Was it...
I think I saw something on socials. Or it might have been the missus. I don't know. I can't remember. But I just remember thinking, oh, that's quite a good idea.
Yeah,
let's go down this rabbit hole.
And you know when you go on these topics, you think, oh yeah, that's a really good one. That's a really good one. And you're thinking, oh crap, like there are loads. Mm. And of course, you know, a good death in a movie obviously motivates the hero to be a better person, or ups the stakes, or the threat level to make the audience sit on the edge of their seat. But some of these, Dan. And listener, there's no reason why they went so hard.
Mm.
And a lot of mine are from the 90s.
Oh, of course.
And some of them are freaking kids' films.
Yeah.
And you're like, why did you do that? As kids, watching these things, you're like, I'm scarred by some of them. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. One of them actually has given me a phobia, which I'm still a little bit freaked out about now.
All right.
But we'll get into that a little bit later.
But shall I kick us off, Dan, with my first one?
Yes, do.
1984. The 80s was an interesting time. We were both born mid-80s. Great music, some questionable clothing, attire, you know, the shoulder pads, the big hair, the shell suits. I did have a shell suit. It was a hand-me-down. But it's only the bottoms. I'd never had the top.
Oh, okay.
They're very sweaty in them.
Yeah.
They're not particularly comfy. But they've made a comeback, haven't they, in recent times?
Have they really? Obviously, I'm not paying much attention to what these kids are up to these days. No,
but anyway, 1984. It's a fantasy film starring Noah Hathaway, Barrett Oliver, Tammy Stronach, amongst others. It's called Never Ending Story, Dan.
Yeah, I've seen this. I haven't seen it for many years, but it was a staple in my 90s films.
I think most families had it on tape at some point or another. Yeah. Now it follows a boy, if you haven't heard of it, listener. I think there's three, is there? I think the second one was better than the first one, but I think there's a third. It follows a boy who finds a magical book that tells a story of a young warrior who's given the task of stopping the nothing, a dark force, from engulfing the wonderful world of Fantasia. In fact, it takes place in two different scenes, doesn't it? In the real world, this boy ends up, I don't know, he takes a book or steals a book from a library, he ends up like playing hooky from school and reads it under a blanket in this abandoned warehouse. Something I'm not sure if I remember it right, but basically he shouldn't be there, but he's reading this book, and as he's reading this other world, then you're watching that come to life. It's an odd one to try and to describe. But I think we all know this one, Dan. I'd say many accounts on the sofa has had this tale recounted during sessions around the world for absolute decades. And the reason being is at this particular moment in time, our hero, he's called Atreyu, enters what's called the Swamp of Sadness, which in itself sounds bleak for a kid's film.
Yeah.
With his beloved horse, Artax. So Artax is this white horse, very splendid, regal almost. And his best friend. I got some role playing for the second down.
Oh, okay.
And Atreyu is protected from the Swamp of Sadness. So as you go into the swamp, you end up basically getting really depressed and sad and down, and the swamp wants to effectively kill you by your sadness.
Yeah.
But he's given this lucky pendant by the Childlike Empress. What's her name? By Childlike Empress. Unfortunately, his horse did not. So he's going through this swamp, and it's basically like quicksand. And it sucks you down as you get more and more sad. And Trey's like, yeah, I'm cool, I'm cool. Hang on, what's going on with my horse? Like, what are you doing? And this is where he soon becomes stuck. Now, Dan.
Oh, no.
I've got some words here. Imagine people haven't seen this film before. I appreciate you've been a while since you haven't seen this. I want you to act out from the top of those three lines there. It's just you, by the way, so obviously he's talking to a horse.
Yep.
I want you to get into the mood of this, okay? By the way, listen, I haven't, as I tend to do with Dan, I haven't actually given him any direction. I haven't told him I'm going to do this. He's going to act it out first time as a curveball. But I want you to take your time, but pretend as though you are Atreyu.
Okay.
You are this budding hero who suddenly realises he's in a bit of spot of trouble. He's going to be okay, but his best friend isn't, who's slowly but surely stuck in the mud and is sinking.
Come on, Artax. What's the matter? What's wrong?
Nay!
Artax, you're sinking. Turn around, you have to. Artax, please. You have to try. You have to care for me. Your friend. I love you.
And the horse carks him.
Oh,
and he's,
man.
I don't know. That's very well done. Well done, Dan.
Drama once.
Oscar. Really?
Yeah.
Could have told. Oscar nominee, no doubt, for next year. For your consideration. And he's tugging on this horse. Now, the RSPCA these days in the UK, I doubt, would actually allow this. Mm. You know, like, because he's this horse is clearly in distress and he's like, I'm not going in with you, kid actor. And he's obviously, you know, resisting as he's been trained to do in this scene, to, you know, to depict that he's stuck in the mud. But effectively, this horse is slowly but surely being swallowed by this quicksand. And I don't know how they do it in the real world as an acting horse, because basically he comes up to his neck and his mouth. I'm like, I think that would fly these days. How do you CGI? Because animal welfare would be all over it. But anyway, in the 80s, that wasn't really a thing. Anyway, he has to leave this horse that basically ends up dying by his own sadness.
Mm.
And it's really sad. And looking back now, I mean, I'll put a link in the description below. And I've inserted the audio for you just to see how good Dan's depiction really was. But it's shocking because this is a kid's film. It's magical and there's fairies and there's trolls and there's beating the baddies and flying dogs, which is really weird. Mm. Hairy dogs. But his horse basically drowns. And you're like, oh my God. Like, this is shocking.
Yeah.
And I think it really upset me as a kid. And watching back now, I'm like, I just can't deal with this. That's my first one, Dan. Never-ending story. Really tugs on the heartstrings. Like, don't leave me. Like, you're my best friend. I love you. Why are you dying? Why are you doing this to me? Yeah, because he's freaking sad. And he doesn't have his magical, you know, necklace round his neck. You're not getting sad. You're fine where you are now because your horse is dead. But,
oh man,
bloody hell, man.
That's enough to scar you for life.
Let's just say I'll never see that film again. I'm even contemplating not shining my son. I can't put down him.
Nah.
I think actually most of these films, bar maybe one or two, I don't think I can show my kids. He has to stick with Bluey.
We watch the stuff so they don't have to.
That's right. We hold those scars.
Well, I've gone for something sort of maybe obvious.
Okay.
But maybe not so obvious. So let's head over to the MCU.
By the way, again, we haven't exchanged notes, so we actually don't know what each other are going to be showing.
Let's head over to the MCU. I know people are sitting there, it's pretty obvious he's chosen Tony Stark, Iron Man, or Black Widow. Well, you guess what? You're wrong. Let's go to the Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3.
Okay.
Quite current. We've got a review out there if you want to listen to it. Rocket is subjected to illegal genetic and cybernetic... You already know where I'm going. Rocket is subjected to illegal genetic and cybernetic experiments and placed in another cage of three other genetically and cybernetically tested animals in batch 89. An otter named Lila, a walrus named Teefs, and a white rabbit named Floor that he becomes friends with. Rocket shows extreme intelligence, finding the flaw in the high evolutionary's design to accelerate animal evolution that made them violent. The high evolutionary plans to harvest Rocket's brain for further research and kill the rest of Batch 89. Rocket escapes his cage and frees Lila before the high evolutionary shoots her, and it's really bleak.
It's horrible.
Comes up behind, I mean, they're both having a nice, loving exchange, and all of a sudden it's like,
we're free,
bang.
We're free. Got the cage open and, yeah.
Bang. Brown bread.
Did it. It really is good to have.
Yes, I imagined you'd do something like this. Back in the cage, P13.
Sky.
Rocket mauls the high evolutionary's face in response, and Teefs and Floor are killed during crossfire with the high evolutionary's guards, after which Rocket escapes.
And it's all CGI, right? And they're effectively anthropomorphic animals, so they're talking animals. And you wouldn't think you'd have such an attachment to an otter and a rabbit or a hare or whatever.
I've actually put my notes that James Gunn does a really good job of making you care about three characters.
Yeah, yeah.
That are just part of a backstory.
You've only seen them probably combined for about 6 minutes on screen.
Mm.
But at the point at which they are horrendously murdered in cold blood, it is. I think I had tears in my eyes watching it.
I cried. I genuinely cried when we saw it. And then I went to see it a few days later with my dad. And again, we both bawled. It's so sad.
Yeah.
And do you know what makes it even more heart-wrenching is...
Tell me.
Bradley Cooper. He made the awards, didn't he? And the OTT one.
Yeah, he did.
It's just... He just carries that emotion.
I mean, I think he talks about how he channeled that scene. But I don't know what he... What he tapped into. But it must have been dark, man. Because... He has a lot of people sobbing, and you're like, that's a performance, and I don't know how he pulled that one out of the bag, and I don't really know where he went to get it done, because that's, to be able to do that, he's obviously offering his voice, he's not even portrayed body-wise, it's just his voice he's projecting, to be able to get that across on CGI about characters who don't exist.
And it's not even his, like, his actual voice, he's got to put on the gruff, sort of.
Yeah.
It's almost like New York-y sort of accent, isn't it? But it's I've only seen it three times. I love Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. I think it's probably... Is it maybe the best of the trio?
Let's face it, 2 in my book doesn't really exist.
No, that's pretty bad.
I've only seen it once. Didn't like it.
I mean, it's just phenomenal on all levels, but that just... destroyed me. And obviously we'll probably see a pattern. There's going to be a lot of animals in this, isn't there?
Yeah, they know how to get you, animals and kids.
Oh god, yeah.
Speaking of which, indirectly, 2004 action thrillers, you like those as much as the next man, don't you?
We love a good noughties film. Yeah.
Man on Fire,
don't know if I've seen it.
Very good, but I might put you off watching this because there is a big spoiler.
Okay.
Denzel Washington, directed by Tony Scott, so he's going to be stylish, lots of guns, lots of explosions. It's based on a 1980 novel of the same name by A.J. Quinnell, in case you want to read it. Now, if you haven't seen it, I think it's one of Denzel Washington's most outstanding roles in his highly celebrated career. There's very few films that he is in that aren't good. Mm. Now, Man on Fire is a film revolving around his character, John Creasy, who's a former recon marine turned assassin who finds himself working on a contract in Mexico. Now, he's hired as a bodyguard for a wealthy car manufacturer's daughter, Peter. Now, as we make our way through this particular scene or this film, we see the two build up a friendship to the point where this inevitable action film takes us to her kidnapping. So he kind of drops the ball, she's kidnapped, and he's got to try and find his way back to get her back. Now, there is a spoiler here, but to be fair, Dan, it has been out for more than 20 years.
Yeah.
So apologies to you and the listener. So I do take little responsibility, but I will recommend that you do watch even after what I'm about to tell you.
Okay.
In the final scenes of the film, Creasy takes a couple of seemingly innocuous hits. Bullets.
Yeah.
By the faceless cronies. I mean, after all, it is an action film, so usually he'd brush these off. You know, they're grazes.
Yeah.
Or whatever. Now, Creasy eventually finds a man who organised Peter's kidnapping and actually finds out that Peter, the girl, who he thought was dead all along, is actually now alive and they're bartering for her return. The barter is Peter's life for John Creasy's.
Jesus.
So John, of course, agrees because, you know, he spent the last two-thirds of the film trying to track down these people. A bit like, what's that film with Liam Neeson?
Oh.
And the same difference where he's trying to get his daughter.
Yeah, Taken. I know what you mean. Taken, yeah.
Basically that, but it's grittier. And it's, this is done superbly. And it's obviously a high body count, due to which, of course, he thought he was doing revenge killing. It's an unexpected scene in as much as... It's almost like it is a prison exchange. So it's two ends of a bridge. The bridge is empty. Everyone... leaves because obviously the cartel are there, they know things are going to go down, and he walks up the bridge and he starts to hobble, and you're like, oh, he's just war torn, he's just had a bad day, you know, he's killed lots of people, he's taken a couple of bullets, but it's okay. And he meets halfway along the bridge this little girl is walking towards him. He's like, it's okay, you're safe now, it's all good, run to your mum, she's behind me, it's all good. She's like, but you're not coming with me? He's like, not this time.
Oh,
you're like,
oh, man.
Hold together.
There's that lump in the throat.
Anyway, he gives her a hug and a kiss and sends her on her way. And she's looking back going, but Creasy. He's like, just go. And as he's walking, he starts to sway. And you suddenly see there's blood dripping off his hand. And you're like,
uh-oh.
Yeah, there's literally no way he's coming away from this. And as he's quickly grabbed by these people, bundled into the back of this car, and they drive away, and there's gunshots and stuff as they try and take him, it's quite clear he's not going to make it. And he slowly but surely slips down onto the back seat of this car.
Man.
And as he's effectively dying, and he's pouring the blood that's very artistically not you know, in any kind of gratuitous fashion. Starts, you know, the life is literally draining away from him. He has flashbacks of his time with this little girl, and fuck me, Dan, it's so heartbreaking. But it's such a very, very, very well done film, because he has such this odd kind of relationship with this little girl, because obviously he's been employed to protect her, and he's the gruff kind of ex-military man, and the girl doesn't, and, you know, like him at first, but then they end up having this appreciation for one another. And then obviously he thinks she's dead, and then finds out she's not, and then she's... Oh, man. I can't describe it.
I can see you welling up right now.
It messed me up, but it's one of the best Denzel films ever. It's so, so good. Man on Fire, Dan. And listen, if you haven't seen it, go give it a watch, because it's just... I think it's one of his best ever. And I've now told you the ending... But I would implore everyone to go and watch it, because I've just given you the last probably 3 minutes of the film, but it goes through obviously quite savagely.
Yeah.
This revenge crusade, and the storyline is so good, and the acting is just so top notch. There's nothing else like it. That's my second one, but bloody hell, it's getting tough, Dan. I'm telling you, it's getting tough.
Let's head over to 2009, Disney Pixar Up.
Oh, Ellie. Man. I can't watch. I have to fast forward. Every time I watch it, I'm fast forwarding the first 7 minutes, 30 seconds.
Oh, God, yeah. It's
and that's how long it is. I know it is.
How long is it going?
It's like 7 minutes, 30 seconds.
Oh, wow. That's. I mean, I've got 10 minutes, but I think you're probably right. It's not quite.
Because it starts off with him, with the building works around him.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is fucked.
I went on a date to see this,
and I
had to hold it together.
Oh,
I didn't see it coming.
I was a mess. I was like,
yeah, exactly. Are you crying? Yeah. No, you're crying.
Yeah.
So we only know Ellie as a character for the first 10 minutes, and it's enough to test anyone's tear ducts.
I refuse anyone to watch that and not feel emotionally damaged by it.
It's a really beautiful montage, you know.
It really is.
They live a long, happy life overall. Carl and his wife Ellie, you know, from the moment they first bond as children.
Yeah.
So they're basically childhood sweethearts.
Yep.
They share an intense curiosity and a love of exploration, and they keep putting off this dream trip to Paradise Falls.
They do.
In their older age, Carl plans to take her at last, but Ellie gets sick and passes away.
Yeah, man.
Before they're able to go. But it's actually her memory that prompts Carl to rig their house with the balloons and fly it there. Never mind his wilderness explorer stowaway.
Yeah. There's no dialogue, and it's all flashbacks and heartfelt interactions between the two. And when she eventually passes away through to illness, and he's like, there's all this colour and this lovely, you know, music, and the score to this is phenomenal, by the way, Dan, because obviously you need to, because there's no dialogue, and then it's all like colourful and vibrant, and then it's subdued and it's quiet and it's empty and it's grey, and I'm like, oh fucking hell, I can't do this anymore.
Had to ruin a film in like 7.5 seconds in one film.
I don't think I ever recovered actually for the rest of the film, though, because you're always thinking back to how they opened it. I was like, I've still got, like, you know, when you cry and you've got like dry eyes, I'm like, I've still got dry eyes from like freaking an hour and a half ago. Like,
yeah,
it's just the wrong way around. They shouldn't hit you in the first 7 minutes, they should do it the last seven.
Yeah,
It's a work of art, for sure.
I mean, this isn't the first Disney Pixar film that's going to enter my list of saddest movie deaths.
Oh, really?
There is no one later. It's a little bit of a surprise left field one.
Okay.
But, yeah, I mean, I challenge anyone to try and watch that film dry-eyed.
You're a monster if you have no feeling towards the end of that scene. It's tough watching.
The opening segment, I mean, for God's sake.
Yeah. It has no right going that hard.
About doing it though, right?
Oh yeah, yeah. Like
Pixar just have this knack of just making you cry.
Yeah. And then we're going to ruin it all by doing a dark theory that they're all related.
Yeah.
But hey, make no apologies. Is that it for your?
That is my second one. Yep.
Okay.
Third one's an absolutely harrowing death. But we'll get there.
Well, we're going back to animals again for my third, Dan.
Oh man.
This film is the first of two cinematic parts based on the 2007 novel Harry Potter and Deathly Hallows.
Yep.
By J.K. Rowling. At this point, the death count starts to ramp up quite quickly.
Oh, it does. It does.
Now, this is a sequel to the Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince back in 2009 and the seventh instalment in the Harry Potter film series. So it opens with Harry and he's saying goodbye to his adopted family.
Yep.
His cousin, his auntie and his uncle, who are absolute assholes. It's like a nice kind of parting kind of acknowledgement that they could have been better, but we hope for the best kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then he's got all these friends around him and old professors and familiar faces from the other films.
I saw an outtake of that actually of Dudley, and he has these really nice words.
Yeah, it never made a cut.
I don't know why it didn't.
Yeah,
it's really good. It's quite powerful.
I guess he didn't need that much redemption, maybe just enough from what they showed. Because he did have a little bit. He was like, yeah, I've been a cock and you are a dick, but, you know, I hope you all the best.
Mm. It's just a shame he didn't make the cut, but it's really well done.
Well, they all take a bit of Polyjuice potion and it's the Battle of the Potters.
They all look like Harry Potter.
They do.
I remember this, yeah.
And they all get onto to broomsticks and flying whatchamacallits and motorcycles, and they end up getting ambushed by, I don't think Voldemort's there, is he there? Definitely the Death Eaters are.
Yeah.
And they're all racing around. It's really, really a fantastic start to I guess, the final throws of the film.
It's some proper cinematic stuff, because they're flying through the clouds. You've got all these, like,
all across
flashes
the Thames,
and
yeah.
It's really well done.
It's fantastic.
It's sort of how you imagine it when you were reading the book back in 2007 when it came out.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's superbly done, and very true, as you say, true to the books. And there's a particular part where they're in the clouds, and Harry is with
is it Mad Eye Moody he was with, or was it someone else?
I think
was it no he was
no.
with
Keeper of the Keys,
Hagrid,
which obviously harks back to how this all started, because Hagrid delivered him as a baby to his aunt and uncle.
It wasn't Mad Eye Moody, but he does cark in that scene, doesn't he?
Well, yeah, he's on his broomstick as well. But who is with him on the back of his motorcycle is his trusty bird, Hedwig. Now, Hedwig isn't a complete bystander, because he does attack a Death Eater who's chasing Harry's flying motorcycle.
Yeah,
tries to buy him some space and time, because they come out from nowhere in the clouds, and there's green bolts flying around everywhere, and they're obviously going to be death curses and the rest of it.
Avada Kedavra.
Exactly.
That
was quite an impression. It was, strangely so. I think you're channeling your inner actor in this episode.
Yeah,
I quite like it.
You've started me now.
I have. You're on a roll. And he basically comes out of his cage and attacks and saves time and stops a killing curse on Harry. But just you think he's about to get away and follow them to safety, he ends up getting hit in the crossfire. You just see this poor bird just lifelessly pirouetting through the clouds into nothingness below. As Harry looks down, he can't do anything, he's obviously escaping for his life,
yeah.
And they've got to, you know, fly away, but he's looking down his friend who's been with him for the last six films and 5-6 years of his school career just drops lifeless.
It's quite sad
beneath him. Anyway, people do talk about the other characters, and maybe this will be a volume 2 or volume 3, you know, about Dobby, who, I mean,
oh my God,
you don't even see it at the end of the film. Like, that hit me, and I had tears at the end of that film.
I mean, that hit me just reading the book. It's such a sad moment.
You just don't expect it. It's purely out from nowhere. It's savage. But no one talks really about Hedwig. And he was the OG companion of the boy who lived, right? He didn't do anything. He saved his friend's life. And you just think, oh, no, he'll be fine. He'll be fine. He'll end up flying. No, no.
No.
No. He's in a cloud of feathers. He's brown bread. He ain't come back from that.
I'm saying Deathly Hallows racks up a hell of a body count, and you know,
at quite a pace as well.
I think we lose one of the Weasley twins.
Yeah, and the other one loses an ear.
Oh God, yeah.
It's very well done, and you know, we're not here to talk about politics and J.K. Rowling, but she did a fantastic job in the stories. And I think the way they're depicted, obviously, to the film were, again, brilliant. Arguably, you know, some things could have done with greater filling out, but otherwise, you can't really fault the film, so fantastic. This one, crikey, lots of tissues needed. Poor Hedwig, man.
Yeah, agreed. I'm going back to the 90s now with my next one.
Oh, yeah.
My Girl. Starring Macaulay Culkin, Thomas J. Sennett. So My Girl is a coming-of-age film where Varda Saltonfuss, played by Anna Chlumsky, goes through a lot of changes in the summer. The 11-year-old processes her guilt over her mother's death. She died just after Varda was born. Bonds with her dad, gets her first serious crush, and has her first kiss with her sweet and geeky best friend, Thomas.
Yep.
But there's one more trial to come when Thomas J ventures out on his own to find the mood ring that Varda lost, accidentally kicking a bee nest, or I'm sure it was a hornet's nest, and triggering a fatal allergic reaction. He gets stung to death.
Oh yeah, they don't leave him alone. Like, they proper going on him. And he can't get away. He's a little kid. He's what, 6, 7 in this film, something?
Yeah, something like that.
He's quite young.
Vada breaks down at the boy's funeral, crying out that he needs his glasses in the casket with him so he can see.
In front of everyone, man. Yeah. It's an open casket, and she's shouting like, he needs his glasses. And like, you're like,
it's harrowing.
Oh, man. Like, that's just, again, there's no reason why I had to go so hard in a kid's film.
In silence.
One good drink every time straight. His face hurts. And where is his glasses? He can't see without his glasses. Put his glasses on. Put on his glasses. He was going to be an acrobat.
He's gone, sweetheart. He's gone.
This was the first film I remember seeing at the cinema way back in 1991, I've got in my notes. Right. My mum took me to see it.
Thanks, mum.
Scarred me for life. I've not seen it since, I don't think.
Oh, I haven't.
I just thought, are all films like this at the cinema?
Yeah.
But it's okay. She cheered me up. She got me an Uncle Sam's next door to the Odeon in North End.
What's an Uncle Sam's?
It was a really nice burger place. I think it's still there.
Oh, is it?
I think it's still going. Okay. The Odeon isn't, obviously. It's gone. It's a Sainsbury's now.
Of course.
But yeah, it was just so bleak. And also, it just shit me up. Hated bees after that. Bees, hornets, wasps, you name it.
Oh, right. That's where your phobia is.
That's a proper phobia. I don't think that came up in our phobias episode.
No.
It's quite odd. I mean, I don't mind bees so much anymore. They're just cute little pairy things, just getting on with their business. But wasps, they don't care.
No, they're spiteful fuckers.
Oh, look, a human sting.
Yeah. And I'm going to grow back another one, and I'll do it again.
Have you ever tried to drown a wasp?
I'm not sure if I want to commit to audio if I say yes or no.
Well, me and my friend did try to drown a wasp. I kid you not, that fucker still lived. He got out of that water and he off he
did went. Did he go and tell his mates and then you end up running away?
Well, I nearly ended up like my guy.
Yeah, crikey.
Yeah, those bastards are invincible, I'm telling you.
But they're, that film, same, messed me up. And I think when I did rewatch it, when I went to visit my mum and she put it on, I was like, we're just going to fast forward the last, 15 minutes of this film.
It's just harrowing. There was a My Girl 2, though, apparently, 2 years later, which I didn't realise happened.
You never watched that?
Don't need to after watching the first one. It's bleak.
That is enough misery for one day, I think. Well, let's stay with the same year.
Okay.
Ish? 91?
Yeah.
An American fantasy adventure film directed by Steven Spielberg. Starring Robin Williams as Peter Banning or Peter Pan.
Oh, I've Dustin got Hoffman. This made my notes.
Did it?
Yeah.
As Captain Hook. Julia Roberts as Tinkerbell. Bob Hoskins as Mr. Smee. And Maggie Smith as Granny Wendy.
I know where you're going.
I've got a question though. Maggie Smith, has she always been old? No offence to the actor. She's great, but she seems perpetually 60 years old.
She stayed the same from that year, even through to the Harry Potter film. I don't think she ever aged. She just stayed the same. Mm. I think you're right. I think she's just she's just drinking baby blood or something. That's a conspiracy theory.
Maybe. Just created one. It serves as a sequel to J.M. Barrie's 1911 novel Peter and Wendy, focusing on now on the adult Peter Pan who's forgotten his childhood.
I love this film. It's so good.
In his new life, he's known as Peter Banning, a successful and unimaginative and workaholic lawyer with a wife, who's Wendy's granddaughter, and 2 children. However, when his old archenemy, Captain Hook, kidnaps his children, he returns Neverland to save them. Along the journey, he reclaims the memories of his past and becomes a better person for it.
Bangarang!
Exactly. Rufio.
Yes.
Played by Dante Basco. Is a lost boy who steps up to lead when Peter Pan decides to leave Neverland and grow up. So he's been continuing the good fight against the pirates. And he's not too happy that the boy Wonder's returned to reclaim his crown. He seems a bit put out.
Yeah.
Not that it matters, because he's going to be freaking dead soon. Now, he barely recognises their old captain when the middle-aged Peter Banning returns and asks for help in finding his children, who were taken by Hook. Now, Rufio, of course, is hostile to Peter at first, making fun of him for his age and everything he's forgotten about their home. But Peter proves himself and Rufio acknowledges his authority. There's a fight scene. It's towards, I think it's the middle or towards the end of the film. the final stage. Hook. Yeah, he goes and stabs Rufio, doesn't he?
Yeah, shivs him.
Fatally during the battle to rescue the Banning kids. And as Rufio dies in Peter's arms, he tells Peter he wishes that he had a dad like him.
Us.
It's brutal. And I'm like, oh. Wow, that's...
powerful.
That stings. Now his son looks on, realises that his child appreciated the father figure when he didn't. And it's a turning point for the Lost Boys' eventual triumph in Neverland. But not before most of the cast forget that Rufio ever existed and trotted off back to their camp. So basically, he's dead.
Sort of rushed over.
And his kids come over and go, "We miss you, Dad, we love you." And his son ends up joining Hook for the first part of the film because he brainwashes him to think he's dad.
Where's the wig, the hat? He's
and thinks his dad's a bit of a prick. On. And he just realises that Rufio has seen what he didn't. Ends up taking off the wig and the beauty spot and runs over to his dad, gives him a hug. Rufio's dead there in a pool of his own blood, but hey, you're back together, so fuck Rufio. And then they all, like, basically fly off and escape.
Hook, no! Do you know what I wish? I wish I had a dad.
Aren't you going to take your friend's dead body and...
Yeah, just going to leave him on this boat? Yeah, man,
just leave him.
Seems a bit weird that they sort of brushed over that afterwards.
It's really odd. If you see the scene now, and again, I'll put a link in the description below to the scene, they'll like, okay, cool, we're done now. So we're just going to go now.
Save the kids.
See you later. No, man, like, the leader of the Lost Boys who you left to be boring, he's cocked it. And they could not give a monkey's damn. If anything...
It's just bonkers.
I am outright livid for Rufio. I mean, Rufio, you're not supposed to like him in the film until that point, and sure enough, you don't, but he was done dirty by everyone in that film.
Yeah.
Steven Spielberg knew what he was doing. But yeah, that was hard, man, because he just turns and goes, "I wish I had a dad like you."
He's like, he's like, oh my God.
His final words. Proper 180.
Grabs you by the kahunas and
it does. He squeezes as hard as he can. That one gets you. It really does. So yeah, that's 1991 film Hook.
Well, that was my last one, but I do have one more. It's all good. So we don't ever share notes, which makes it sort of all the more surprising that we've probably fought on the same lines.
Yeah,
that's a really powerful one. Well, I'm going to go to 2015. As I mentioned, I've got one more Pixar film, Inside Out.
Oh, yeah.
And you're probably thinking, or some of us are probably thinking, what's he on about?
Yeah, I don't recall what part, but I mean, I know that it was very touching. Yeah.
So, humans are bundles of conflicting emotions. Pixar's Inside Out is about how challenging it can be for children to accept that's true.
Have we talked about this before? We have, haven't we? And how good it is?
Well, yeah.
Because clear child psychologists use as a way of explaining emotion to children, because apparently it's actually spot on.
Yeah, I think we've talked about this in another episode, and I couldn't remember where we went to cinema. It was in Dungarvan, so it's just along from where my other half's mum lives in Newell.
Alright.
We went out one evening, 2015, when it was out in the cinema, and we went with my other half's niece. It was just a really nice evening out, you know, watched the film, got McDonald's, went back home, chilled, love it. So most of the film takes place inside the head of a young girl named Riley, where different feelings battle for dominance and then learn to work together. In the place where Riley keeps her memories, Joy meets and talks with Bing Bong, Riley's imaginary friend.
Oh, yeah.
For Joy to escape the memory dump, Bing Bong determines he has to allow Riley to forget him, grow up, and use other mechanisms to work through her emotions. So he sacrifices himself.
He takes one for the team, doesn't he?
He sacrifices himself to the past, adding to the bittersweetness of the movie. Shouldn't be emotionally attached to essentially an imaginary friend, but Pixar have literally done it again. Do you remember the song?
I don't.
Let's just add to the drama A that I got in when I was in year 8.
Oh yeah.
Who's your friend that likes to play bing bong, bing bong? His rocket makes you yell hooray. That sounds dodgy, isn't it? Bing bong, bing bong. Who's the best in every way and wants to sing this song to say bing bong, bing bong?
That was it. I feel like I'm there. I now remember him. Wow. Yeah, you're right. It is quite a sad moment as he fades.
It's just growing up, isn't it? I mean, I don't know if I had any imaginary friends, but I mean, if you go back to the Halloween Volume 1, apparently I might have done. His name was Peter, and he was turning lights off in the house.
Yeah, you didn't. That was legit.
That's ghost. Some paranormal shit. Mm. That's a good episode, by the way. People should go check out.
Really good.
OTT 6, I think.
That's all your autism kicking in there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Well, my last one is probably one that most people expected. A 1994 American animated musical coming-of-age drama film. Walt Disney.
Yeah.
Lion King.
Ah, so good. 94?
Apparently it's inspired by William Shakespeare's stage play with Hamlet and some elements of the biblical stories of Joseph and Moses. Anyway, set in the kingdom of lions in Africa. I mean, I don't know why I'm explaining this, because surely most people know this.
Everyone's
but anyway,
seen the Lion King, right?
The Lion King tells the story of Simba, a lion cub who succeeds his father Mufasa as king of the Pride Lands. However, after his paternal uncle Scar kills Mufasa to seize the throne, Simba is tricked into believing he was responsible for his father's death and flees into exile. Now, after growing up in the company of carefree outcasts Timon and Pumbaa, Simba receives valuable perspective from his childhood friend Nala and his shaman Rafiki, before returning to challenge Scar to end his tyranny and to take his place in the circle of life as the rightful king. Of course, what I'm talking about is one of the saddest death scenes of all time, which came in that film,
yeah,
where we had to see young Simba watch on helplessly as his father fell to his death unceremoniously in the stampede.
Yeah, that's bleak, isn't it?
But apparently the death scene wasn't always meant to be quite so horrific, Dan, the listener.
Really?
Uh-huh. It was once written in much less detail. It was Rob Minkoff, the film's co-director, who decided to make the scene depict the minute details. He said, "We needed to have the opposite of Bambi," Minkoff explained. "We're trying to test the boundaries of what was possible in an animated movie, a family movie, a Disney movie," he says. So he and his team decided to reshape the death scene to show the sheer reality of death. And I think that's when I actually bored my eyes out as a 8-year-old.
Yeah.
Horrible. A father figure, a parent, you're very familiar, you know he's lured into a trap. You're like, oh, he's going to get away. He may be, you know, slightly damaged, may get a gammy leg. But no, he's gone.
He's gone.
I don't even see his body, do you?
No, he literally just falls into the stampede and that's it.
He's ground.
It's gone.
Into the ground, into a mist. Bloody wildebeest.
Yeah.
Not their fault, though. It's the hyenas that did it, wasn't it?
Wasn't it Scar?
Well, Scar was in charge, but wasn't the hyenas that started to scare them or something?
I don't know. I think it was, because he sort of kicks up stampede with the hyenas, but it's Scar that essentially digs the claws into...
When he couldn't grab on.
Oh.
You just see him fall. Savage, man.
Why do they do this to us as kids? It's just...
I'm all for...
Plexed?
I'm all for kind of giving some reality to for kids to understand, but did they have to understand that? That scene, man's bad. Bad's in is good, but bad's in there's just no reason to go that hard. Poor Mufasa. The Lion King, 1994. Interesting enough, there's... a particular part of the film where if you pause it you can see words in the clouds.
Okay.
Have you heard about this?
Yeah.
It's like subliminal. I believe it's the word sex in the clouds.
Yeah, I think you're right. I have seen this. Isn't it like throughout a lot of Disney films? This is probably an episode in its own.
I believe so, yeah.
The sex cloud.
The sex cloud.
It's a thing. Alex just googled it, and it's the first thing that comes up is Lion King sex cloud.
Yeah, lots of people had not too sure if they'd seen it, because it's a transition part of the film, and there's puffy clouds, but as you quickly gaze over, the clouds are forming a word. But it's over so quickly, in a half second if not less, you're not quite sure if you've seen it. And sure enough, people have paused it and gone, yep. And well, we can talk about it at a different time, yeah. Perhaps when there's I think we've done bloopers, perhaps we can do some more behind the scenes. But yeah, there's more than just death scenes going on in that film. There's all manner of things. I have got some honourable mentions though, Dan.
Okay, quickly. Let's do it.
Guardians of the Galaxy,
mm-hmm.
but Volume 2.
Okay.
Yondu's death.
Oh, that is sad.
It is sad. You're not supposed to like him, but at the end he kind of does redeem himself.
Yeah.
And Yondu's death scene does contain two things that are guaranteed to make audiences cry: a heroic sacrifice and a touching father and son relationship. Now, after serving as a bit of an anti-hero, Yondu undergoes some great character development and fully turns to the good side in the final third of the film. He also embraces Peter as his son. Now, this has then come to a head when only one of them can leave the planet alive. Once it's clear Yondu is giving up his life to save his surrogate son, nothing can stop the waterworks from flowing.
Nah, made me cry.
His death is brutally sad, but also leads to some very touching funeral scenes backed by brilliant music of Cat Stevens. And it's the beautiful send-off that Yondu deserves.
Yeah, it's a good scene.
Really good.
Probably like the best part of the film.
100%. That's the only good bit of the film, in my opinion.
That's when he's starting to die as well. So I might not have been your father, but I was your daddy or something, wasn't it?
Yeah. Funny to the end. The Amazing Spider-Man 2, 2014.
Yeah.
Gwen Stacy. We all knew it was going to happen, really, for those who read the comics. When Gwen falls from a high place during the Battle of the Green Goblin, Spider-Man tries to catch her, but his web reached her too late.
Yeah.
And her head just quickly goes...
Snap.
Donk. And you're like, is she okay? She's okay. She's going to have a bit of concussion, but she'll be fine. No. Her neck snapped. Peter realises that he failed to save Gwen, breaks our hearts into a million pieces.
Yeah.
And thanks to a terrific performance by Andrew Garfield, this death scene always gets us choked up.
Chokes me up in No Way Home.
I had tears at the end of that. We talked about that before.
Yeah.
But that's when he actually manages to save his Gwen.
He saves MJ, doesn't he?
Yeah.
He saves, well...
It's a one-for-one
Tom Holland's
scene. Yeah.
MJ. And he's sort of quite emotional about it then. He's like, oh, I did it.
He's like, are you okay? And then MJ says, are you okay? And he's like... I think so.
He sort of just nods, doesn't he?
Yeah.
That's all he can do, but it's just such a good moment. So just it's, to tie into that, yeah, brilliant.
Oh, it's phenomenal. And the final one is Albus Dumbledore.
Yeah, that's...
Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince.
That's harsh, man.
In order to get advantage over Voldemort, he has to make his body vulnerable. And while it's already hard to see him weakened, it's tough to watch Snape utter the curse that ends Dumbledore's life in that bloody clock tower.
Yeah.
In one swoop, Harry loses a father figure, the Wizarding World loses a great protector, and the heroes lose trust in Snape. And just when we're getting over Dumbledore, of course, as we mentioned before, Dobby gets a dagger in his chest. These two characters will always hurt us.
Oh, 100%. 100%. I still remember Dumbledore, like, reading the books before the films had even come out. Like, that was just shocking.
It's, Yeah, I don't know if I got to that point where I read in the book, so I don't think it was expected. He's very well done, because, of course, at that point you're already starting to realise that actually Snape's in on it and he doesn't want to do this, but he kind of has to continue with the ruse, and actually he has to kill him because Dumbledore... Does he have the Horcrux on him, or is he Horcrux? I can't remember why he had to kill him, apart from just keeping the Death Eater kind of persona. But anyway, and you're like, that's the ultimate betrayal, but they're all in on it and he has to die.
Yeah.
They're like, oh my god, like Gambon.
It was some sort of bond, wasn't it, between Malfoy and someone else. If Malfoy didn't do it.
Yeah, basically it was like a blood oath, wasn't it? You're right. And and he said he would kill Dumbledore, and if he didn't, he'd
the unbreakable bond.
That's it. But Gambon pulled that out of the bag, man. Like, he did such a good job in that scene. Sad times. And that was only the beginning. So, yeah, that was my other honourable mention, which was Dumbledore.
Well, that's it for us. Let's go to the listener. So I'm going to apologise in advance. I probably don't know half of these films because, you know, I'm just...
You're
not,
Dan.
I'm Dan. I'm just not that knowledgeable with some of these films.
Let's hear them.
Let's kick things off with Jay. He says, haunts me from my early teens. The death of Jack in Four Brothers. Absolutely heart-wrenching.
I've heard of the film. I haven't seen it.
I've not even heard of it.
Yeah.
Maybe it's a bit of
home. Isn't that the one with George Clooney? Four Brothers.
Furiously Googles as I'm talking.
Yeah. Four Brothers. No, I have seen this.
Oh, you have?
Yeah. Mark Wahlberg.
Oh. It's a Wahlberg film.
They came home to bury mum and her killer. It's a strapline.
Wolf.
Bobby, Jack, Angel and Jeremiah, four brothers who come together to hunt. Is this the right one? Surely not. 2005?
He doesn't say, but I presume it probably is.
Come together to hunt down a powerful gangster, Victor Sweet, who they believe is responsible for killing the woman who raised them.
Who plays Jack? Oh. It's not Mark Wahlberg.
It's not then.
Oh, that's got Chiwetel Ejiofor in it.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Is this the same film or different film?
I think it's the same. Must be. That's got to be the film, Four Brothers.
There's not other ones coming up here. This is quite a good film, though. Okay. I've only seen it once, I think. You know when Love Film was, and you get the DVDs in the post? It's one of those ones where it's on your list, and you're like, I don't even remember like putting it on the list, but I watched it. I was like, it's quite good, actually. Mark Wahlberg films are always quite good.
Yeah, quite enjoyed, but Mark
always
Wahlberg,
gritty. Yeah,
bit of homework. Next up, we've got Stefan. He says, Bruce Willis, Armageddon. You know why.
Yeah, man.
It's the ultimate sacrifice.
Yeah.
To allow his daughter to be happy with...
Ben Affleck.
Ben Affleck, yeah.
But when they're talking, it's like, don't do this, Dad, don't do this. It's like, you go enjoy your life and have a fantastic, whatever he says, fantastic wedding and all that. I try to channel my inner Bruce Willis when I'm on the Comet or something. Yeah, that's really good. Yeah, really good shout. Actually, I forgot about that one.
Armageddon's not really a film I go back to a lot. It's just because I think it's just such a bleak film.
Oh, no, 100%. Like, in fact, I think we talked about this before in our disaster movies.
Yeah.
I think I prefer to watch Deep Impact over this just because Deep Impact is unapologetically very, very similar. I mean, it was released within like 18 months of each other or something.
Yeah, there wasn't much between them, was there?
But that one isn't so much sad as in it's a quality disaster film. Armageddon is a sad film, and it's done perfectly, by the way, listener, Dan. I don't disagree. But I think I'd go back to Deep Impact because it doesn't quite put on the heartstrings.
Isn't Deep Impact the one where the wave just wipes out that couple on the beach?
I think so.
Or is it a father and daughter? I can't remember. But again, that's quite tragic.
Yeah.
They sort of know they're impending doom, but they just stand there and they just watch this massive tsunami like come towards them.
Oh,
so bleak. Next up we've got Tristan. He says, the dog in I Am Legend. Well.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's a dog.
It's always the dogs, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like Marley and Me as well.
Oh, that's in our next listeners.
It's like, for fuck's sake, like, why do they do that to us?
It's always animals. I've seen Marley and Me, and I tell you what, I bawled at that as well.
I've only seen that once because it was so depressing.
Yeah, and my missus refuses to watch it because she knows the dog's going to die.
And it's like all dogs go to heaven. You still watch it,
yeah,
but they'll freaking die. Oh, man. It's the animals that get you.
Oh, it is. Next up, we've got Lewis. He said, well, we've got a list from Lewis. I'm pretty sure there's some here we can talk about. Mickey from Rocky 3.
Oh, right, yeah. Been a while.
I've not watched any of the Rocky films for a very long time. Apollo Creed in Rocky 4. He's put Rest in Peace, Carl Weathers.
Mm.
He's chosen one of yours, Mufasa, Lion King.
Yeah, unobvious, yeah.
Good. This is a good one. Spock in The Wrath of Khan.
Oh yeah, and he's in the reactor and they're both saying their goodbyes. Yeah, man, that is tough to watch.
They flipped it around, didn't they? They reversed it in the Star Trek recent films.
2009, yeah.
But yeah, it's quite heart-wrenching. Because, I mean, you get the search for Spock afterwards. And is that the third film?
It is, I think so, yeah.
But yeah, I love Wrath of Khan just because it was almost like a Empire Strikes Back sort of film.
Yeah,
because the Enterprise gets blown to bits.
Yeah, it all goes off the rails, but for good reasons. It's
And I always remember that death scene always made my nan cry.
Oh, wow.
Without fail. I hated seeing my nan cry because she was always quite a happy person. But again, the power of movie, isn't it? We sat here talking about the films that made us bawl. Giving us some scars. The Terminator in Terminator 2, Judgment Day.
True.
Is that where he clings onto the chain and they lower him into like a...
to the molten...
pit of molten metal.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's sad, man. This is a bit of an unusual one. The baby ant in Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
I don't remember that one.
I haven't seen that since the 90s. Maybe, again, we'll have to revisit this.
Yeah.
Oh, this is a good one. The Death of the Franchise, Indiana Jones 4.
Yeah, I've really struggled to...
was that the Crystal Skull?
Yeah, Crystal Skull. Surrendous. I really struggled to get through that. In fact, I'm struggling even more so to get through Dial of Destiny.
Mm.
And that's on Netflix. Disney Plus.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. Well, you don't even know about it.
No.
It's out.
Last time I remember it was just coming out in the cinema, so that must have been last year.
It's not good.
Is it not?
No.
Okay. Is it just...
It's got Mads Mikkelsen in, which is fantastic, but it's quite slow. You just can't possibly go up against The Last Crusade, in my opinion. That is cinematic masterpiece.
Yep, agreed.
Lucasfilm, you just can't. Spielberg in it? George Lucas and Spielberg? yeah, no, 100%. Yeah, that is a death that had no right to do that to Harrison Ford, and what a legacy.
Next up, we got Kerry. She says the Nan from Marcel the Shell with Shoes.
Oh, I don't know that one.
She tried to sell it to me, and I've got to say it sounds a bit bleak. Marcel, a 1-inch tall shell, lives with his grandmother Connie, the only residents of their town after their neighbour's sudden mysterious disappearance. When discovered by a guest amongst the clutter of his Airbnb, the short film he posts online brings Marcel millions of passionate fans and a new hope of reuniting with his long-lost family. But apparently, it's the typical story of a grandmother. Her shell cracks.
Oh, no.
And then... gradually she just dies of old age.
That's horrible.
Yeah. I don't know if I can watch this film, but no, it went viral. Who wrote it? Oh, it's a Universal film. Director was Dean Fleischer Kemp.
No, I don't think I can watch that.
Yeah, I'm not sure. There's not really any actors that I'd recognise, to be honest.
But it's an animated one?
It's animated, yeah. Next up, we've got Kelly. She says, the dad in Click gets me every time.
Adam Sandler?
Yeah, I think it is. Is that the one where he had the remote and he could pause and...
I think I've only seen that once.
Yeah, 2003, 2004. I wasn't a huge fan. I found Adam Sandler films just went...
Yeah, I'm not a Sandler fan either.
Just bombed after
I liked 90s. I liked Grown Ups. I thought that was funny. But otherwise, I'm not a Sandler fan.
No. This 90s stuff was brilliant.
Yeah.
But anything after that, it's just a bit...
Yeah. Little Nicky was good.
Yeah, so good. Waterboy. Happy Gilmore.
What's the wedding one? The Wedding Singer?
Yeah.
They roll off the tongue because they're quality, but yeah, it just kind of fizzled out.
What's the one I'm thinking of where you had to go back to school for 2 weeks?
I don't know.
That was a good film. I can never remember the title of it. Billy Madison.
Oh, okay.
That was a good film. Big Daddy as well. That was good.
Big Daddy's really good.
And she's put... But can I also just say, I have no problem watching humans die in movies. That's really unhinged. But kill a dog and I'll never watch it again.
Yeah, man.
There's movies I've never seen purely because I heard the dog dies in it. And I highly recommend you do not watch Marley and Me because that will have you bawling. And I've got one more. So it didn't make my notes. And Mrs. was going to submit one.
Okay.
We only briefly talked about it in the kitchen when I was making dinner earlier. So let's rewind. Another Pixar film. It is called The Good Dinosaur.
Oh, I haven't seen it, but I've heard of it.
It's quite sad, but it's a really good film, and I'd recommend people watch it. So it's in an alternate history. The asteroid that would have caused the extinction of dinosaurs 65 million years ago passes safely over Earth.
Oh, great.
Millions of years later, Apatosaurus corn farmers Henry and Ida have three children, Libby, Buck and Arlo. While his successful siblings are allowed to make their mark, a mud print on the family's corn silo, Arlo's timid nature makes tasks difficult for him. Henry attempts to give Arlo a sense of purpose by putting him in charge of guarding their silo and helps him set a trap. It captures a feral cave boy, but Arlo cannot bring himself to kill him and sets him free. Disappointed and a little mad, Henry takes Arlo to track the cave boy into a ravine. Henry then saves Arlo from a flash flood before being killed by debris.
Wow.
So again, we've lost another father figure.
Keep on doing it.
Yeah. I highly recommend it. It's quite a recent one. I think it was another 2015 film.
Okay.
Which is quite unusual because I think Pixar only churn out like a film every year.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. But I'm looking forward to doing it. Well, I say I'll look forward to doing a volume two. There's obviously more deaths for us to discuss because no one talked about Tony Stark in any of those.
No. And actually, one just comes to mind right now. I never even thought of it. Daniel Craig's last outing.
Oh, yeah.
And that cruise missile he took to the face.
Yeah, well, yeah, literally.
I had tears in my eyes back in that fateful November of 2021.
Yeah, it was. Just sort of coming...
There's loads.
Just coming out of Rona signs.
There's loads that we think about. You're like, yeah, man, that was tough watching.
Yeah. Oh, 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 oh. I mean, that's it. That rounds up for a really bleak episode.
Sorry, listener.
No, we did it. We got there.
You know... hopefully you've enjoyed it, and hopefully there's some films and they go, actually I will go and watch that again, or oh, I now know that something sad happens, but you know, you're perhaps intrigued and motivated to watch them if you haven't done before. But yeah, no doubt there'll be a volume two, because there's loads. So yeah, if you want to perhaps recommend any that we haven't listed, like some of our other listeners have done so far, then there's plenty of ways you can get in contact with us.
Yes, absolutely. We're on Facebook, Twitter, or X now it's known as.
Yeah.
Instagram, Threads, TikTok, which is at OnTheTopicPod. And then we've got Gmail, which is onthetopicpodcast@gmail.com. And then we've got YouTube and WordPress.
Yeah, we do. OnTheTopicPodcast.wordpress.com. Go have a look at our website. Got our ugly mugs, our bios. We've got a whole back catalogue there you can stream at your leisure. And you can subscribe to the newsletter and be notified when a new episode drops. We've got some bonus content on there for you as well. And on YouTube, all you've got to do is search for On The Topic Podcast or at OTTGITS. We've got all of our OTT back catalogue on there. And again, when you visit, smash that subscribe button and notification bell to be notified when a new episode drops.
Yeah, absolutely. And follow those socials, see what we're up to next. So our next episode is going to be The Mad Pooper.
Yep.
A rogue woman in 2017 who was pooping on people's lawns.
She just can't stop.
She just couldn't stop. But she, we don't know who she is still to this day and if she'll ever strike again.
Intriguing.
And then we're going to do the Kit Kat Japanese taste test.
We will.
I've brought back several flavours I'm quite excited for.
The crunchy confectionery.
There's some odd flavours in there. I think one of them's wasabi flavoured.
We're not going to do a blind test because otherwise we just have no idea what they are. But no. we'll also talk about the different flavours.
So it should be fun.
Yeah.
And then we've got the Disney.
Disney.
Oh boy. I've been on the red wine again.
Well, also, there's lots of tears and emotions flying around in this episode, Dan, so yeah. We can forgive you for the Disney
Pixar theory.
That's it.
Where they all sort of tie in. It's going to probably be a little bit dark.
Yeah, there's some really strange theories, but Disney films do have lots of Easter eggs, and they are actually, to some extent, all connected.
Never going
to
live that down, am I?
No.
It's going to come up in future episodes. Disney.
Disney.
Oh, boy. Well, I'm off to drink the red wine because I'm genuinely quite sad now. I've been Dan.
And I think I need to get on the blower to my therapist because I need to book in a session as soon as possible. I'm Alex.
Well, and we'll see you next time.